Thank you, Mr. Kinsella. Good to see you all. And hi to everyone on the webcast. Happy Sabbath. So there's a commonly known practice that happens in workplaces of all sorts. You guys, if you've ever worked anywhere, you might be familiar with it. It's when you're sitting around shooting the breeze, you know, maybe by the water cooler, somebody sees the boss coming, and they say, "The boss is coming!" You know, and everybody quickly rushes and shuffles papers and looks like they're working. Look alive! Here comes Lois, or whatever your boss's name is. Anybody been there? I don't know, maybe you are the boss, and you see everybody scrambling when you walk up. The title of today's first message is, "The Boss is Coming, Get to Work." The boss is coming, get to work. What kind of employee are you, brethren? I've found there's at least two types of people in the world that I know of, those who want to work and those who do not. And it's a hard thing these days to find people in that first category, people who want to work. Matthew 9, you can turn there with me if you want. Matthew 9. And verse 35. In Matthew 9 and verse 35, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. And when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." You know, I get calls all the time. I own a small construction company, a renovation company. I get calls all the time about people that can find me more jobs and get me more jobs and people who want to take my money every month to give me new leads and send me new customers. And what I always tell them is this, I've come up with this line that I'll always tell them to kind of shut them down, because, you know, they have the script when they call. They have this script they're going through and they're trying to sell me some service. And usually what I say is, "Well, I don't need any work. I've got plenty of that. That's taken care of. But I need workers." I said, "Do you happen to know anybody who lives in the area who's skilled and knowledgeable and wants to work? Because I can put them to work." And they usually don't have a response for that. That was already written down, so usually speechless. What kind of worker are we? Turn with me to Romans 6. Romans 6 and verse 15. Romans 6 and verse 15. Okay, Romans 6, starting in verse 15. "What then? Shall we sin because we are not under law but under grace? Certainly not. Do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one slaves whom you obey? Whether of sin leading to death or obedience leading to righteousness. But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. And having been set free from sin, you become slaves of righteousness. I speak in human terms because of the weakness of your flesh. For just as you presented your members as slaves of uncleanness and lawlessness, leading to more lawlessness, so now present your members as slaves of righteousness for holiness." And then in verse 20, Paul says, "For when you were slaves of sin, you were free in regard to righteousness. What fruit did you have then in the things of which you are now ashamed? For in the end of those things is death. But now, having been set free from sin and having become slaves of God, you have your fruit to holiness, and the end, everlasting life. So the point here, brethren, is that we are all slaves to something. We're all working for somebody. We're either slaves to sin or we're slaves to righteousness. And we get to choose. Now we get to choose because of what Christ has done for us, and he's given us the option, the opportunity to choose life. We have the opportunity to be free from sin. Also notice in the part we just read in verse 17, it says you obeyed from the heart. From the heart, that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. We'll come back to that later. We should be working with all our heart. With all our heart. Let's turn over to Colossians 3. Colossians 3. So we're all servants or slaves to somebody or something. And we want to be servants of Christ. Colossians 3. Colossians with a C. Colossians 3 and verse 22. Depending on what translation you have, it might say servants or slaves. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not to men. In other translations, verse 23, it says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord and not human masters. Knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. But he who does wrong will be repaid for the wrong which he has done, and there is no partiality. And then there's instruction to masters. Masters, give your servants what is just and fair, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. So interesting thing about that is we're all servants, even the masters. Even the masters have masters. So we're all servants to someone. Brethren, are you a slave or a master? These days it seems like we get the opportunity to be both all the time on a daily basis. You may think, well, I don't have any employees, or I don't tell anybody what to do. But anytime we go to a restaurant, we are the master, right? They're serving us. They're our servants. How do we treat them? Anytime we call customer service, we are the master, right? They're working for us. How do we treat them? Have we ever beat our servant with many stripes for not refilling our sweet tea in a timely fashion? Hopefully not. I don't think so. But we get to practice every day, even in the little things, being good servants and being good masters in that way. Let's turn over to Matthew 24. Matthew 24. Matthew 24 and verse 45. Matthew 24 and verse 45. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household? This is Christ speaking. Ruler over his household to give them food in due season. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. Assuredly, I say to you that he will make him ruler over all his goods. But if the evil servant says in his heart, my master is delaying his coming, and begins beating his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he is not looking for him, and an hour that he is not aware of, and will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Wow. Got really serious really quick there in that verse. But the point is, we want to be that faithful servant, right? The servant that when our master comes, he finds us so doing. So brethren, what are you a slave to? Who are you serving? What are you serving? Sin or righteousness? Hopefully that's an easy one. At least we know where our aim is, where our goal is. There's no middle ground. And also we see in this last parable we just read, there's no middle ground. If you're not working, if you're not doing your father's work, then you're slacking. Let's turn over to Daniel. Let's turn over to Daniel 6. Brethren, we should strive to be known for our work ethic. We should be known for that. My dad would read this story to me when I was a boy, and I remember tears coming to his eyes, and this just felt so real. It felt like we were there. I want you to notice something about Daniel and what he was known for. In Daniel 6 and verse 4, we'll break in verse 4. Daniel 6 and verse 4. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful. Nor was there any error or fault found in him. So they couldn't find anything wrong with him. They couldn't find anything to pin on him. And these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." So these governors and satraps thronged before the king and said thus to him, "King Darius, live forever, all the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps and counselors and advisors have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except for you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions." Fairly wordy. It sounds like a political thing, right? That was like a lot of fine print in there. "Now, O king, establish a decree, sign the writing so that it cannot be changed." And then they pushed their glasses up on their nose and they said, "According to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree." So they set a trap for him is what they did. They did a dirty thing. They set a trap for him. And when Daniel, verse 10, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since his early days. This is an older Daniel now. These men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God, and they went before the king, and they spoke concerning the king's decree. "Have you not signed a decree, O king, that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions?" And the king said, "Yes, it's true." And then they reminded him, "According to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter." So they answered and said before the king, "That Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, does not show due regard for you or for the decree that you have signed, but he makes his petition three times a day." And the interesting thing about this story to me is the relationship between Daniel and the king. One of the many interesting things. The king was duped into trapping Daniel in this way by the people that surrounded him who hated Daniel, but he ended up making this arbitrary law, you know, in order to catch Daniel doing something deemed wrong at the time. But the interesting thing, look at the way they felt toward each other. You can see it. The king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself, and he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. He hated what had happened, and he labored until the sun going down to try to find some way around it, and he couldn't do it. And then they reminded him again that no law can be changed, you know, according to the Medes and Persians. And the king gave the command, "Okay, bring Daniel and cast him into the den of lions." The king spoke, saying to Daniel, notice this part, brethren. "Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you." Your God, whom you serve continually. And then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signets of his lords, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. So the king followed through with what the law said he should do. And now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No musicians were brought before him, and his sleep went from him. And the king arose very early in the morning, and he went in haste to the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried with a lamenting voice to Daniel. Again, notice this relationship here. And he said, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" And Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever." Notice that relationship. It just blows me away. There was no hatred there. "My God sent his angel," Daniel said, and shut the lion's mouth so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. Now the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. And Daniel was taken out of the den, and no injury was found on him, because he believed in his God. Brethren, he believed his God, and how did that belief manifest itself? It wasn't just a thought he had. He was known for being a servant of the living God. That was the thing he was known for. When the king came to check on him later, he said, "Oh, Daniel, servant of the living God." Has anyone ever addressed you that way? I mean, it's a little antique, but even still, I've never had anybody address me even close to that. "Oh, Matthew, servant of the living God," you know? Or what's the modern equivalent to that? But we should be known for that, brethren. Maybe I can get one of those little banners on my Facebook profile pic that says, hashtag servant of the living God. Just kidding on that one. Let's go to Matthew 6. Matthew 6. The next point is, when we're working for God, we should do it for God, not for recognition. Not for Facebook likes or recognition from others. Matthew 6 and verse 2, let not your Instagram know what your Facebook is doing. No, sorry, I got the wrong version. In the New King James, it's Matthew 6 and verse 2, it says, so when you give to the poor, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogue and in the streets, so that they may be honored before men or by men. Truly I say to you, they have their reward in full. But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. This is a really strange concept these days, isn't it? It seems like the whole world of social media revolves around everyone seeing what everyone is doing at all times. That's kind of the point. And especially if we're doing something good or praiseworthy. Not that social media is the evil here, but I'm just saying that we should be careful, right? Because how do we still keep this? How do we keep this direction here in Matthew 6? In verse 3, not to let your left hand know what your right is doing. Sometimes social media can be a good thing. For instance, some good things are only good if they're shared. Kind words are only good if they're shared, right? Music is only good if it's shared. So it can be a good thing too. But we have to be careful. Has God given you a gift, brethren? Has he given you a spiritual gift? A physical gift, any sort of gift that you can use to help others, to encourage, to build up. Has he done that? It's been said that if you were to discover a method to completely eliminate air pollution in all 50 states, and it only costs 50 cents a state, some of you have heard this, right? You could eliminate all pollution in all 50 states. It only costs 50 cents a state. The absolute worst thing you could do would be to tell anybody about it. Not because anyone would steal your idea necessarily, but because of all the people that would come up with all the ways why it couldn't be done, shouldn't be done. There needs to be a committee established to study it. It's got to be submitted to Congress, et cetera, et cetera. The worst thing you could do is to tell somebody. The thing you should do is to just do it. This is true with gifts that God gives us. If we've been given a gift, if we've been given the ability to help somebody, to say a kind word, to sing a song, to lift someone up when they're down, we shouldn't stand around talking about it. We should just do it. I tell you, work has been really busy lately, the busiest I've ever seen, and there's been a few times when I've seen able-bodied people standing around complaining that they don't have a job, and sometimes they've come and asked me for a job, and I've offered them one. The next day, I'll hire you tomorrow. I'll just sign up at this company. I'll hire you tomorrow. Very few take me up on that. It boggles my mind. There are those who want to work and those who don't. But brethren, if you want to work and you feel you have the ability and God's given you something that you can share, right now is the time. Speaking of social media, There is nothing that's out of our reach. If you have a song that you think the world should hear, you can sing it. And in a couple minutes, it'll be across the world. Everyone will hear it. So there's nothing stopping you. So maybe in the past, there were certain groups and certain people who were held down and held back by others. They couldn't say a word or sing a song or do anything. But now you can. There's no more excuse. All the excuses have been taken away. So anything that you feel that you can do, you're free to do it. And if it is from God, it'll work, right? You'll be able to test that theory. I worked on a construction crew for Roger Griswold for about 3 years when I first moved here. And we went through several employees, and some last longer than others. That's just the way it goes. And there were a few who liked to talk a lot about how much they liked to work and how good they were at it and things they could do. And there was this one guy in particular who used to brag that he could cut a perfect diamond out of a piece of plywood with a circular saw. And he would say that all the time, that same sentence. I could cut a perfect diamond out of a piece of plywood. I don't think he was from the South, though, but I'm trying to discredit him, so I used a Southern accent. But I'm not sure why that was impressive, you know, because it doesn't seem like a very useful skill. I mean, we don't cut many diamonds out of plywood in common home building these days. You know, but the point is, I don't even remember the guy's name because he wasn't around long enough. He didn't want to work. He liked to talk about it, but he was gone just like that. Brethren, we live in a time that's different from any other in this way. There are no more excuses, no barriers between anyone doing the work that's right in front of you. If you want to write a blog, sing a song, volunteer somewhere, the harvest is plenty, but the workers are few. The boss is coming, brethren. What will we be found doing? Have we been working like Jesus is our foreman? Have we been good to those under us, those things and people that are in our control? Will we be known for being servants of the living God? What does it mean to be a servant of Christ? Let's go to Deuteronomy 6. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 1. Looking at being a servant of God, brethren, I would submit that it requires every bit of us. When I hire somebody to work on my team, I'm not looking for someone to punch the clock. I'm not looking for someone to just to walk around with their tool bags on, talking. I'm looking for someone who can swing the hammer. I'm looking for someone who can work and move, and someone who's motivated to do that. And they're doing it with not just with their hands, but with their mind. They're thinking about what we're doing. They're thinking about the next thing down the line. I think that's what God's looking for too. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 1. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 1. These are the words which Moses spoke to all Israel on the side of the Jordan in the wilderness, in the plain, opposite Suf, between Paran, Tophel, Laban, and all those other places. Verse 2. It's 11 days' journey from Horeb by the... Okay, where am I at? Let's see. I'm in the wrong place. Deuteronomy 6. I was in Deuteronomy 1. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 1. Now this is the commandment. Starts very similarly. This is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you're crossing over to possess. That you may, verse 2, that you may fear the Lord your God to keep all his statutes and commandments which I commanded you. You know, that sounds very similar to what we're supposed to be doing at the feast coming up. That we may learn to fear the Lord our God. And your son and your grandson all the days of your life, that your days may be prolonged. Now verse 3, therefore hear, O Israel, and be careful to observe it, that it may be well with you, that you may multiply greatly, as the Lord God of your fathers has promised you, a land flowing with milk and honey. Now verse 4, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. This, brethren, is how we can be a good servant, a good worker for the house of God. We read in Romans 6 about obeying from the heart as we become slaves of righteousness instead of slaves of sin. We believe that gospel. We read in Colossians 3, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord. Now here we are reading the Shema, Deuteronomy 6. Let's go on now to verse 7. After we're told that this should be in our heart, in verse 7, you shall teach them diligently to your children, talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Do we do that? I'm trying. I've been striving. I tell you, it's been on my mind lately. The world seems to be changing, and with every change, I tend to start thinking, what should we be doing? And that's why I'm talking about this today. It says in verse 8, you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. The point here isn't that we should write the law on a tiny little scroll and put it in a vial and strap it to our hand and our head. The point is that our hand is doing the work. And our head is thinking about the work, right? It's in our mind. It's in our brain. It's on our hand. We're doing it with every bit of our strength. That's what our hand represents. The point is we use these hands and we use these minds to think about it. It's not that we actually write things on the door trim of our house, but maybe, like Daniel, that we're known in our community as someone who serves the living God. And there's other ways to be known for that other than writing it on the doorpost. Joshua 24 and verse 14. Joshua 24 and verse 14. Now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth. Cast aside the gods your fathers served beyond the Euphrates and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. But if it is unpleasing in your sight to serve the Lord, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your fathers served beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Taking that stand right there is what we just read about. It's just as good as putting it on your doorpost. You know, I said I've been more aware of this lately, and I feel like it's just been on my mind, laid on my mind very heavily. And as a result, I've had several opportunities, or maybe my eyes have just been opened to several opportunities, to talk about God's holy days, God's plan, to random people. I don't know about you guys. Have you had that? Have you had that happen? I've been talking about it with friends, and then I go to work, and all of a sudden somebody asks me, one of my clients, just yesterday, She heard me say something about atonement. I think I was on the phone with somebody else. I'm not sure. She came up and she was not afraid to ask a question. And she said, did you say the Day of Atonement? And I said, yeah. And she said, so you guys keep that? Are you Jewish? And then I was explaining it. No, we're not Jewish. We're Christian. But we do this and this is why. And, you know, and it was kind of, it really wasn't that awkward. You know, it was a lot less awkward than it has been in the past. So it was good. She asked lots of questions, and it was almost fun to talk about that. I've had suppliers ask me recently, why aren't you picking up these materials are ready for you. We finished it on Friday. It's ready to pick up. And they said, we'll be open tomorrow. And I said, no, I'm going to church tomorrow. And, oh, okay, well, we're open on Monday. And I was like, I'm going to church on Monday, too. And so I'm going to pick him up Tuesday. He's like, oh, okay, what are you doing on Monday? And I told him. And so anyway, Romans 4 and verse 3 tells us that Romans 4 and verse 3, I'll say it again, tells us that Abraham believed God and it was counted to him as righteousness. We read just a minute ago how Daniel believed. Abraham believed. What did Abraham do, by the way, with his belief? one of the hardest sacrifices anyone has ever had to do. And it was counted to him as righteousness. That's what it looks like to believe with all your heart. To love the Lord your God with all your heart. And we also have to do all of our mind, everything we're thinking, capturing every thought, and all of our strength, everything we can do. You know, when I think, when I read that verse in Deuteronomy and I think about all my strength, I usually think about the larger muscle groups, you know, like lifting heavy boulders and things like that, just as the word picture. But it's every muscle in our body. How about the tongue? It's a small one. Are we running that race with every ounce of strength we can muster? Taking every opportunity. I would like to encourage you today that we are more capable than we might think. There are countless opportunities to discuss God's plan, the things He's got in store for us. All we have to do is get to work. In all my hiring, I've learned that an ounce of attitude is worth a pound of knowledge any day. Having somebody there with a positive attitude and a willingness to work in whatever situation we find ourselves in, that is invaluable. You can't teach that. So what's the attitude that we have when it comes to God's work? Are we punching a clock? Are we putting in our hours? We can show up to church and we can be here and warm a seat and we can send in our tithes, all that we should be doing. But it shouldn't stop there. Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but life has definitely felt a lot different lately. With current events, the way things are, life has felt different. It's been different. It's obvious to see. But it's made me more aware of these questions and the questions of what is my duty as a Christian servant. So, we may think we're ignorant or incapable sometimes, brethren, but if we stay on the path, all things work together for good. I'm going to share one more story. I was helping one of my girls get dressed this morning, Kayla, and I was sitting on the floor in my closet. And I realized, as I was sitting there on the floor, a few things. I realized, oh, my muscles are really stiff. It kind of hurts, you know, but it felt really good to sit there. And I was stretching kind of accidentally just by sitting there with my legs crossed, helping my girl put her clothes on. So I started stretching a little more, and I kind of laid down and put my head right on the floor and I stretched my arms out. And I was thinking to myself, oh, this seems like a very prayerful position that I don't use very often, you know, completely prone, laying flat on the floor. And then I realized that my head against the floor, well, it hurt. It hurt to have my head on the hardwood floor. But it was interesting to me that there's this one spot right in the center of my forehead where it doesn't hurt. And I can have my head right directly on the floor and it doesn't hurt at all. And the reason is because there's a scar there, right in the middle of my head. And that scar is probably from about 25 years ago. I was a young boy. My dad and I were about to haul off a load of scrap metal off the farm. We lived in the country. We slowly would collect old broken appliances and things and stoves and washing machines, you know, and giant tube televisions. And as young boys will do, I was waiting for my dad and I was keeping myself entertained. And so I found this old muffler pipe laying there in the scrap metal pile and I picked it up and I'm swinging it around, you know, and I was like, it was all trash that we're going to haul to the scrapyard. So I was starting to smash the things. Just kind of fun. You don't get to smash a washer and dryer very often. So I was hitting them with this pipe, and as a 13-year-old or however old I was, it felt, you know, I was exploring all that. And then I saw this TV, and I couldn't resist. It was this old tube television, really heavy. It's like, for all you young people, it's like almost as heavy as a piano, you know, and it takes a couple guys to lift them, and the screen is like a dome, not concave, it's convex. It's the opposite way from the ones nowadays. So, but anyway, and I decided to try to hit it with this pipe. And I swung it up over my head as hard as I could and hit it right on the middle of the screen. And while I was still moving down toward the TV, the pipe was moving up toward my head. And it hit me right in between the eyes and just, dang, rang my head, and I was a little out of it for a while, and I had this big knot in the middle of my forehead for a long time, and finally it kind of went away. My forehead was a lot smaller at the time, too. It was all the way down to here. So right there is the center at the time. So, yeah. So, but little did I know that that ignorance and stupidity would later have given me the ability to pray with my face directly down on a hardwood floor without it hurting. And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. So I joke a little, but it's just to show that God can take our stupid and our ignorance sometimes, and He can make good out of it if we're still moving forward, if we're striving to be good servants who want to work. So Jesus said in Matthew 9, we already read, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Brethren, what kind of worker are you? Are you just staying busy? Are you standing around a water cooler?" I'm asking. I'm not accusing. I'm just asking. Asking me. Asking you. Are you complaining about your manager? Or are you working as if Jesus was your manager? Putting all your heart and all your mind and all your strength into each and every work day, doing God's work. I would encourage you, brethren, to look for the opportunities to do the work, because they are there. I would remind you that the Master is about to return, and we all want to be found, as Christ said, doing His work. The boss is coming. Get to work!